Hello and welcome to Farm Machinery Digest Engine Review from the Idle Chatter Podcast. I am Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, and this is the first and hopefully many different engine review podcasts. You know, as the Farm Machinery Digest and my Idle Chatter Podcast and the Hot Rod Farmer Minute and the Bushels and Cents is all based upon education. And there are so many components that are involved with farm machinery and vehicles. It could be a new engine, it could be a new transmission, it could be a new header design for a combine or what have you. And so I wanted to break off into these little sub-podcasts or ancillary podcasts. And so this is a engine review podcast. And I've also done road test podcasts where I test the whole vehicle as a farmer would. And it's the only farmer-oriented road test on the market, I would say, or market or on the website or in print. So this is going to be an engine review. And you know, lots of times a new engine will come out in a older vehicle or older piece of equipment. And the key element there is to be able to get that information to you, my audience, so that you could not only learn about it, but if it comes time to invest in it, that you have some background and some knowledge about it more than the brochure or sadly the salesperson at the dealership would be able to tell you. So to launch this engine review podcast, I'm really, really, really excited because our first engine review is going to be about the new General Motors 3-liter inline 6-cylinder Duramax diesel. And that is a completely new engine from the ground up. So since this is a new adjunct to the Idle Chatter podcast, I thought it was very, very appropriate. And geez, I'm moving the papers around here. And just got all excited about this engine. And if you're a long time listener, you know it doesn't take much to get me excited about machinery. But you know, we're going to do that. I'm going to go over that today. And hopefully you could learn a little bit more about this engine. And I will also give you in this podcast a driving review, because what good is an engine, right? Unless it's on a stationary engine, on an irrigation pump or on a welder or something like that, or a compressor, we need to know how it drives. And the vehicle that this engine was showcased to me in was a 2020 GMC Denali crew cab pickup truck with four-wheel drive. So it was a very heavy truck. It was a beautiful, beautiful truck, gorgeous truck. But we're not going to really discuss the truck today. We're going to discuss the engine. And in a previous podcast, a road test podcast, I did a road test article on my website under Getting to Know, and also a podcast, road test podcast, on the 2020 Chevy Silverado High Country, which is the Chevrolet version of the Denali. The Denali has an air ride front suspension, whereas the High Country doesn't. And it has a couple of other bells and whistles. But that particular truck, the High Country that I road tested, had the 5.3-liter Ecotec 3 engine in it, which was an excellent, excellent drivetrain. And the Denali was featuring the new Duramax inline 6-cylinder diesel with the 10-speed automatic transmission, the same family of 10-speed that went in with the gas engine in the High Country. So, but we are going to be concerned with the engine because I am the hot rod farmer, right? And you can't hot rod a body, you could only hot rod an engine. So I think we need to go a little bit backwards here so we could discuss this new member of the Duramax family. You know, back in 2001, General Motors introduced the first Duramax diesel. And that was available in its 3/4 1-ton pickup trucks, the Chevrolet and GMC, obviously. It was not available in the 1500 series, which was called the Silverado or the Sierra. Excuse me, that engine was, I'm going to have to kill this for a second, my voice is coming bright. Hello, I'm back. It's pretty bad when your voice gives up 4 minutes into the podcast. But anyway, that engine was a game changer, the 2001 Duramax. And, you know, even the most ardent competitive brand loyalists, you know, agreed. And, you know, there was probably a lot of buzz going around in Detroit, the big three, well, the big two, right, at that time, because the third one was General Motors. about how the Duramax, the 2001 Duramax, was going to influence the market, and probably a lot of shaking going on because it ended up being an excellent engine. And the Duramax was a clean sheet of paper engine, and it was not, so there was nothing sacrosanct about it. They weren't trying to. Now, that's important to understand, because if you look at in the General Motors family, their history, and you know, a lot of people black eye the GM diesels. I mean, I'm not talking about the Detroit diesels. I'm talking about the ones that they used in the cars in the late 70s, the Oldsmobile-based diesel, and then that went into the light-duty Chevy and GMC pickup trucks. It was, they called it a 5.7. That was a time when the country was transitioning from English system to metric. I like, it was a 350 cubic inch, right? So anyway, 5.7. And then they came out with the 6.2 liter diesel, which really had nothing much to do with the 5.7, which was an Oldsmobile-derived block. And then they had a came out with the 6.5, and then they came out with the Duramax. And, you know, a lot of people black-eyed the 5.7, the 6.2, and the 6.5. And to tell you the truth, I mean, they weren't, from my perspective, they were not bad engines, all right? I mean, actually, they were quite good if you knew the idiosyncrasies and you took care of them. The problem with that particular engine, with that whole series of engines, is that the many people who bought them were not familiar with owning a diesel engine. And they would do a lot of short cycle trips with it, and specifically with the Oldsmobile-inspired diesel, short cycle trips with it, and they would start them, go 2 or 3 miles, what have you. And that's sure death to a diesel. And another thing that GM did with the early version, the 5.7, which in retrospect they should have known better about that, is they used the timing chain in it in lieu of timing gears. So the original Oldsmobile-inspired diesel that was based upon an Oldsmobile block was using a timing chain. And then what would happen is the timing chain would wear, which as all chains do. And when the timing chain wears on a V8 engine, the camshaft timing retards. And since the injection pump was driven off the camshaft in lieu of a distributor would be right on a gasoline engine, is that the injection pump timing would skew. And that gave a lot of drivability issues, some smoke issues, a lack of power. And like I said, they really should have known better as far as that's concerned. They'll put some sort of constant tension or mechanism on the chain. But anyway, you know, that was a love-hate engine. Most people who hated that engine was simply because they really didn't understand it, and they were putting it into a service that was not what it was intended to be. But, you know, to their defense, the consumer's defense, you buy something, you buy it, and you intend to use it the way you want to use it because that's what you bought it for. And then what happened, as I said, you know, in 2001, the Duramax came out, and that had nothing to do with the old engine families whatsoever. But there was an obstacle, and the obstacle, and was not only faced by General Motors, but the entire industry, was that the fast expanding and very profitable half-ton pickup truck market was devoid of a compression ignition engine. That's a diesel. And specifically one that was worthy of the Duramax name. The Duramax very quickly, even though it was introduced in 2001, brought a new standard of smoothness and quietness to the diesel family. And the Duramax back then was one of the quietest light-duty diesels out there. So GM really, you know, recognized this. And they were also kind of late to the game as far as this new engine that we're discussing today, which is identified, they call it the 3.0L Duramax diesel. And it's an inline, it's not a V6, it's an inline six-cylinder diesel. Now, when I say that they were late to the game with this, they weren't that late. All right, let's call them fashionably late. All right, because Ram was the first one to bring out a V6 in a 1500, or let's call it a half-ton pickup truck with their Fiat-inspired 3-liter V6. And then Ford came out with, I believe they call it the Lion V6, a year or two later, which was a 3-liter V6 also in the F-150 line. So Ram was first with that engine, with their version of a 3-liter V6. And, you know, just so that you could understand, geez, how come they're all 3 liters? Well, the thing basically is that in engineering, there's a sweet spot for engine displacement, and for a 6-cylinder engine, a 3-liter is more or less a sweet spot. So it's a 0.5 liter per bore, right? So six times a half is 3 liters. So it's a 0.5 liter per bore. And I'm not going to get too deep into that, because as a farmer, you're really not going to need to be concerned with that. It's more like an FYI. And that is why, and then just like if you go into gasoline motors, 4-cylinder gasoline motors, everybody has a 2-liter engine, because that's the sweet spot. And if you have a 4-cylinder engine, a 2-liter is a half a liter per bore, right? 0.5 times 4 is 2. So in engineering sense, there are these sweet spots that you just, like, you could look in the field and go, you know, there's a sweet spot for the population of your corn or your soybeans in your field. So that ends up being a sweet spot. But so Ram had the 3-liter, and it was very, very, very well received by the consumer. I mean, people were buying a Ram pickup truck, and they were getting 28, 30 miles per gallon on a highway or a little bit more. This was totally unheard of. And then Ford came into line with their engine, and I don't really know if they did much marketing on that engine. So with the Ford V6 and the V6 diesel in the F-150, and then now Duramax, General Motors has stepped up to the plate. So, you know, really, if you want to look at it, it's 2020. This is a new engine for 2020, and it took 19 years, right, from 2001. If Biden was an absent that day when they taught that in math, it took 19 years. But the current 6.6 liter V8 Duramax, which is now a 6.6 liter, has a younger brother. And that younger brother is the engine we're going to discuss today. It's the 2020, as I said, in line, not a V6. So this is bucking a trend that Ram and Ford has established with the V6. It's an inline 6-cylinder Duramax diesel. So it's wearing the Duramax family name. And that's a high mark to hold up to, all right? So the new engine, the 3-liter, is a completely new design as of the 2000, back in 2001, as the first Duramax diesel was. And it shares nothing at all of its architecture with any other engine in the company's lineup. In addition, what I want to make clear is that it's the first ever inline 6-cylinder turbo diesel offered in the full-size GM trucks. So it's the first ever. So it's got it's completely new, clean slate of paper engineering. And it's got, and what, you know, as an engineer, when you see clean slate, that's often very exciting, because it becomes your wish list. As a development engineer, it becomes your wish list. And I'd say, ah, man, you got to do this. We got to keep this. We got to keep this block. Or we got to keep this cylinder head. And you say, I can only do so much with that. But clean slate means that you could write your wish list down. And as we move on, you'll see that I believe that there was a lot of wish lists inside General Motors during the development of this engine. And they were able to get their wish granted. So now, to back up a little bit, you know, you say it's an inline engine. Well, you know, a lot of people grew up, or most of us grew up, you know, an inline engine was a 6-cylinder. Most of the listeners here are too young, including myself, to remember an inline 8-cylinder engine. They did exist for many, many, many years, but we kind of grew up, the V8 engine was already established, and the inline engine was more for a 6-cylinder or a 4-cylinder. And, you know, there were V6s, then V6s came about, and then there, believe it or not, there was actually V4s. And it was the Saab cars, the Sonet and some other Saab cars actually had a V4 engine, which a lot of people, in case you go on Jeopardy, they ask you a question, right? Is that actually was a Ford industrial engine. So there were V4 engines out there. They weren't not very, very popular, but they were out there. But there's no denying, if you were to talk to an engine development person, the inline engine has a lot of attributes to it. And why specifically an inline six-cylinder, just is a natural sweet spot for the harmonics inside the engine and the crankshaft and what have you. But why didn't it, then why is everybody going with V6s instead of inline sixes? And simply, a V6 engine is half as long as an inline six-cylinder. Three cylinders on one side, three cylinders on the other. And when it comes to a car platform, not so much a pickup truck, but a car platform, a V6 is easier to package because it is shorter. But if you were to talk to an engine guy, you'd really like an inline engine. And if you look at most big farm equipment, they have inline six-cylinder engines. So you buy a combine, you buy a big tractor, even if it's something like a Case Steiger or something with 600 horsepower, or you buy a Versatile with a Cummins in it. So they're inline engines. So there's something going on there. And what's going on is that an inline engine offers the perfect balance of what's called the primary and secondary forces that are created by the rotating and reciprocating assemblies over a V8 design. So it is inherently more balanced and smoother. So we'll leave it at that, all right? And thus, you know, the smooth operation is devoid, which is a fancy word that's missing. It's not there. And it's devoid of what they call NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. And it's able to accomplish this without the complication of balance shafts. So a lot of V-shaped engines or even some inline engines have a balance shaft in them. And a balance shaft is something that actually, it looks like a camshaft, but it's actually a shaft that rotates counterclockwise to the crankshaft. And what it's meant to do is to cancel the firing pulses and the harmonics that are created by firing pulses. And lots of times with a smaller V6 engine, you will need to integrate a balance shaft or two balance shafts in there. And that becomes, you know, complicated. It becomes expensive. But it also gives another potential problem area, and the balance shaft needs to be driven off the crankshaft or off the camshaft. Usually it's off the crankshaft, and it needs, so that means it needs to be another chain mechanism, and just very, very, a lot of busyness going on there. But by GM going with the inline engine, inline Duramax 3-liter, we're eliminating that. We don't need any balance shafts because by design, by DNA, it's inherently has a lack or minimized NVH, which is noise, vibration, and harshness. Now, some other things, excuse me, you know, I said a couple of minutes ago that there's a clean sheet of paper, this engine from the ground up. There's nothing, I don't even think the oil filter was used before. I may be wrong with that, but I don't think it is. All right, so, and that allowed the engineers to, as I said, make a wish list and say, what would you want in the wish list? And you know, when you look at diesel engine development, specifically in the light duty market, there's been a lot of development the past few years in the V8s. And the V8s were the Duramax, as we're discussing, and then the Ford Powerstroke. And Ram stayed with the Cummins, and the Cummins is an inline six-cylinder engine, and there's no denying that all three of those engine families are excellent. I would not be, you're going to be picking fly manure out of pepper. You're going to have to pick, if you had to pick one of those engines, you had to pick it for some personal reason or something. You can't pick it by a faulty core design or the way they ran. So you need to really... To say, oh, I'm going to buy a Cummins because I like this, or I'm going to buy a Duramax, or I'm going to buy a Powerstroke. I mean, lots of times that decision is made because the engines are so close together in quality and in performance and reliability, is that you're buying the engine, you're buying the body to go on to the engine. So you say, well, I like a Ford truck, or I like a Chevy, or I like a Ram truck better, or I like this, that, what have you. But the engines, to tell you the truth, it really is so competitive that you'd have to pick out some minute aspect of that particular engine to make you, to steer you into purchasing the truck that houses it. So, but, you know, Cummins also came out with a very nice, with a beautiful, beautiful V8, a 5-liter V8, that they sold to Nissan for their Titan for a while, and sadly that engine did not take off in sales in a Titan, and you know neither is the Titan really taking off on sales. If you're interested in that particular truck, not with the diesel but with the gas engine, I did a road test on it, and it is on my website. As far as an article on the Getting to Know One, there is a podcast, a road test podcast. But sadly, Cummins, you know, developed this engine for Nissan, and Nissan ended up dropping it out of the line. But it is a very, very nice piece, and it's a 5-liter V8 diesel. But getting back to the clean slate approach, is that the GM engineers were able to take, you know, have this... Excuse me, the basic architecture is that it's a 4-valve cylinder head, and which is going to allow for the best breathing, because if the more valve air you have, the better the engine is going to breathe on the intake and exhaust side. Then the fact is that every engine, the better, the more it breathes, the more power it's going to make and the more efficient it's going to be. So the block and the 4-valve cylinder head on the 3-liter Duramax are aluminum. And this is in contrast to the V8s, where the V8s, the blocks are cast iron and the heads are aluminum. So this is a completely aluminum engine. And as I started to say, and I got myself off on a sidetrack, is that, and I meant to say when I was talking about the engine families, the V8s, is that if you, even as advanced as those engines are, the current V8 diesels, they lack in a lot of the technology and attributes that a modern 4-cylinder gas engine has. For instance, variable valve timing is one of the things. Variable runner intake manifold is another. So when GM thought about this new Duramax, they looked, from my perspective, they looked over to the gas engine side and said, hey, man, you know, they probably the same thing that I was saying. Well, I'd love to have a diesel with a start-stop, which this engine has, which I didn't get there yet. I'd love to have a diesel with, you know, aluminum head, aluminum block, which this engine has. I'd love to have a diesel with a 4-valve cylinder. Well, other of the V8s have 4-valve, so we'll go there. I'd love to have an overhead cam, right? Okay, this has got overhead cam. So I'd love to have all of this. And they basically looked at the cherry-picked the great technology from the smaller gasoline engines, and they've taken it and they moved it into the diesel column. And excuse me. So but the block, not only is it aluminum, enjoys what is called a deep skirted design. And that means that if you were to pull the oil pan off that they and look up into the bottom of the block, right, that the casting extends below the crankshaft center line. So if you were to take the oil pan up, there's a whole bunch of block there and the crankshaft is up further, where you take a traditional engine design that the crankshaft is almost to the bottom of the casting of the block. So what this is called, a deep skirted block, which they do with a lot of engines are deep skirted, but we haven't seen it in this level, in this community yet. And then the rotating assembly on the Duramax is a forged steel crankshaft with forged steel connecting rods and high silicon content hyper-eutectic pistons. And a hyper-eutectic piston is something that came out many years ago, and I don't know if any of the other light-duty diesels use it, but in essence, it's a super saturated piston with high amount of silicon in it. And the piston also has a thick crown and a very strongly reinforced land area. So the benefit of a hyper-eutectic piston over a cast or forged piston, they're all going to be aluminum, but the hyper-eutectic means that it has a higher, they actually squeeze, it'd be in essence putting a 4-pound sausage in a 3-pound sack. The amount of silicon in that piston is through a special procedure, is putting the four-pound sausage in the 3-pound sack. And it allows, the reason for that, the benefit of a hypeutectic piston, is it allows for a tighter clearance, what's called the skirt to cylinder wall clearance. Right, so from the skirt of the piston to the cylinder wall clearance is tighter because the piston does not expand as much. If you have a forged piston, you have to have a looser tolerance because a forging expands more when it heats up. And if you have a cast piston, you could run it tighter, but it doesn't have the strength of a forged piston. So a hypereutectic piston is a wonderful marriage of being able to have a tight piston to wall clearance and not have the noise, and have better oil control and not have the noise, and it's lighter than a forged piston. All right, so it's the benefit best of both worlds. Now, moving on to the cylinder head. As I said previously, it's a double overhead cam design, and you know, that may sound you know, simple to understand, and it is, but for those that are new to engine technology, a double camshaft design means it's a separate camshaft for the intake valves and a separate camshaft for the exhaust valves. When you have a single camshaft, the lobes that operate the intake valves and the exhaust valves are on the same shaft, the same camshaft, right? So it's a double overhead cam design. And the camshaft's chains are driven from, the camshaft chain is driven from the rear of the engine. So it's a rear drive for the camshaft chains. I'm not that thrilled about that, because I think if you ever had to change this cam or service this cam chain drive, that you would probably have to pull that engine out. I'm not 100% sure about that. Because I haven't been able to get a hold of someone in General Motors that's knowledgeable about that. And then you talk to a media person, oh, it's going to last forever, right? Yeah, they're like a salesman. But anyway, so it's not a deal breaker for me, but, you know, hey, it's in the back of the engine. So to me, that means usually anything that's in the back of the engine, you have to pull the engine out if you want to service it. And then the crankshaft drive chain runs the high-pressure direct injection pump, and which in turn operates the camshaft. So there's a chain that's going to drive the direct injection fuel pump, and that is also going to operate the camshafts. So it is driven off of that. But now the other thing that like I said, it's not, you know, an alarm is not going off in my head, but I did lift my eyebrows when I found out is that the oil pump for the engine is a new variable pressure design, which is very, very common in the industry today because you're looking for any type of fuel economy gain. And you, inside every type of engine, there's three losses. There's thermal losses, there's pumping losses, and there's frictional losses. So the thermal losses are the heat that goes out the exhaust and into the coolant from the combustion event. It's not doing anything to drive the piston. The frictional losses are the friction to turn the engine, right? Turn the crankshaft, you know, run these chains, run everything. And then there is pumping losses. And the pumping losses are the work that the engine needs to do to first draw the charge in, the air and fuel mixture, and then exhaust it out. So what basically has happened is that the industry has really moved forward in engine design as far as the oil pumps are concerned. And this is a variable pressure oil pump. So what it does is that it's able to determine what the load is on the engine, and we need to have enough oil pressure there to maintain what is called the oil wedge, to keep the connecting rod off the journal of the crank, and also to keep the main bearing supported off the journal of the main bearing, so it doesn't ride into the bearing itself and have the babbit. And that's what they call the oil wedge theory. There's actually a wedge of oil that supports the crankshaft and the connecting rods. And what is found in the industry is that if we have a fixed pressure, that would be like you going in the field. This is akin to a variable rate sprayer or variable rate planter. All right. So everybody today is variable rating. So and that's what they're starting to do with engine designs. They're variable rating the oil pump because they realize they don't need, just like you said, I don't need this much fertility here. I don't need this much spray here. I don't need this much seed here. Right. So it's variable rate. And the thing is that they're going to look at that and they're going to determine when the engine needs more pressure, because you have to remember there's more of a frictional loss inside that engine if you have to build more oil pump pressure. And just like you as a farmer, if you want to increase your yield on your crop, you don't look for 10 bushels in one place. You look for 50 different places where you could get an incremental change. And that's what happens in engineering. So, if you're looking for 5 horsepower, you don't look for 5 horsepower in one place. You look for half a horsepower in 10 places. And that's basically what's happening. And they've also found in the industry collectively that the old theory of very high oil pressure is akin to like moldboard plowing in agriculture or agronomy. It looks real good when you get done if you have the plow set nicely, but it's wrecking the organic matter, killing the earthworms, doing everything, letting the automatic organic matter go up into the air. It's carbon. And we found years ago, people say, I'm running 80 pounds of oil pressure, right? And we found out in the industry that was akin to like moldboard plowing. It made us happy, but it was not the best thing for the engine. And the new theory is to have high volume and enough pressure to support the oil wedge. So with the oil pump on the Duramax, it's a variable pressure pump, and it is going to change the pressure in the oiling system based upon the cylinder load that is going on. But the other thing that comes into play, which I personally have never seen before, it may very well exist in other applications, but I have not been exposed to it, is that it's a belt-driven oil pump from the crankshaft, not a chain-driven, it's a belt-driven. So I'm sure, with the belt technology today and the way the rubber is and what have you, I don't think that's basically going to be a problem. But like I said, it is something that, it's very, very, it's a lot of cutting-edge technology in here. And, just like years ago, people look at cruise control on a car. I'm buying cruise control. That thing is going to take off on itself and kill me, right? Well, so I don't want to raise any flags here because there is new technology here that I have not been exposed to. And for most part, my audience or the industry has not been exposed to. But additional engineering features in this engine include a variable runner intake manifold, variable geometry single turbocharger, and advanced active thermal management system. And what that means is that this engine actually separates the coolant flow from the block and the cylinder head. So it redirects, there's a separate feed that goes to the block and there's a separate feed that goes to the cylinder, and then it both goes into the radiator. So it's one radiator. So it's not like you're saying you're having a radiator like for an intercooler for the cylinder head and the block. But what they could do is they have a three-way thermostat and control. So based upon the temperatures, the engine controller could look at it and they can maintain an optimum temperature in the block, optimum temperature, in the cylinder head. So it's what they call a thermal management system. And it also consists of a high pressure common rail direct injection, 36,250 pounds. And that could provide up to 10 inject cycles per cylinder firing event. A very, 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 very highly managed fuel injection system, on the diesel combustion system, because that fuel is the combustion system. Unlike a gasoline engine where you have the fuel air mixture and you need the spark plug. So very, very highly managed system with 10 inject cycles per firing event. So very, very, very highly managed. And then the engine, also the 3-liter Duramax, for diesel, it's a fairly low compression ratio. And that gets back to NVH, noise, vibration, and harshness. And it's a 15-to-1 compression ratio. All right, so it's obviously a direct injection engine. It's a 15-to-1 compression ratio. And what it basically does is it runs 42.8, so we'll say 43 pounds of maximum boost pressure from the single turbo. So it's a 15 to 1, and that 15 to 1 is going to give you a quieter combustion event. And also with those 10 inject cycles per cylinder firing event, that's going to be able to manage and control that combustion event and keep noise down and also keep emissions down. So it all works together. It's, you know, building an engine and designing an engine to get, as I've always say in my podcast, and if you've listened to me in the past, is that, you know, in the, as a farmer, we go into the field and we're searching for goal. Our goal is yield. So many bushels per acre, all right? So many tons of silage per acre yield. On an engine, when you're designing an engine, your yield is the power it produces, horsepower and torque. So everything that you're doing works collectively, just like you as a farmer works collectively to drive that yield. What they're doing here is to drive horsepower and torque and efficiency, fuel efficiency and emissions. So whereas as a farmer, you're only juggling one ball, right? You're looking yield, 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 yield. I want yield. As an engine developer, you're looking specifically on a vehicle that's a road vehicle. And what I mean by a road vehicle is a vehicle that is a passenger vehicle that has to meet strict emission standards. Is you're worried about horsepower, you're worried about torque, you're worried about fuel economy, you're worried about emissions. Then also you say, that's all wonderful, it's a great engine, but it's noisy as hell, or it shakes like anything, but it gets great fuel economy. Totally unacceptable. So it's yield plus, 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 plus. And that's what makes things so difficult. And that's why there's so much of an integration of technology into this new Duramax. So now all of this works together, right? And we're talking yield. So let's talk, we're a farmer, right? We want to know how much horsepower it has. So this 3-liter engine, and if you do the math, as I've said in the beginning, a liter is about 60 cubic inches, more or less. So it's about 180-something cubic inches. So this engine delivers 277 horsepower, peak horsepower at 3,750 RPM, and 460 pounds-feet of torque at 1,500 RPM. But more importantly to you, as a farm truck, as a ranch truck, is that 95%. So 95% of that peak torque is available from just 1,250 RPM. So that means this thing is going to pull like a D9 Caterpillar bulldozer, right? And is sustained through 3,000 RPM. So it's got a, no disrespect to the people in Kansas, it's got a torque curve as flat as Kansas, all right? And unless you're in the Flint Hills, but as flat as Kansas. And the thing basically is that's really what you, as I say, you buy horsepower, but you drive torque. So with 95% of the 460 pounds-feet of torque available from 1,250 RPM all the way up to 3,000 RPM, this engine is going to not only be very responsive, you're going to tickle the throttle, it's going to take off and move, but this engine is going to pull better than the diesel pickup trucks did with their big V8 turbo V8s 10 or 15 years ago. Because if you look at the horsepower and torque, but more importantly, I'm going to break away for a second, because the thing is, I don't think people realize when you're building an engine and you're testing an engine or you're developing an engine, whatever term you want to use, it's a lot like a yield contest for corn or for wheat or whatever. I always reference corn because I have a background, as you know, I raise sweet corn. So even though there's no yield contest for sweet corn, but you know, you have a yield plot and you go in there and they take this one section. Oh man, I got 500 something bushels, whatever the number was, right? And that's your number. It doesn't mean that you got 500 bushels throughout that whole plot or throughout that whole farm. You got that 500 bushels in the area, you checked it. So that's the peak. So if that was an engine, you'd say it's a very, very peaky engine. Well, at 5,000 RPM, I have 600 horsepower. Before that, I have to be ridiculous, 400 horsepower. And after that, I have 300 horsepower. But right at 6,000 RPM, so let's say, right, it's like you going through the field and looking at your yield monitor in a combine, say, wow, right over here, the section I just went through, I had 542 bushels per acre. Excuse me, but the field only averaged 312, which is a wonderful field, but 312. So that is why I'm telling you about the flat torque curve. And when you look at an engine, whether it's in a tractor, whether it's a truck, whatever, it's going to drive and pump. So you could have an engine that has more peak torque, but if it doesn't have that flat curve where it has that torque throughout the RPM range, it's not going to pull like that. At that one spot, that one RPM, it's going to pull, but beyond that, below that or above that, it's going to fall off the map. So the thing is that's why I'm telling you that this little 3-liter engine, because some of you may shy away from it. You know, you come from the school, I need cubic inches, I need this, I need this. Well, if you have 95% of 460 pounds feet of torque all over the place, this thing is going to pull like an engine 2 times its size 20 years ago. All right. So, and then the maximum engine speed for this inline six is 5,100 RPM. So that is very high speed for a diesel. And it has to be a lot of, and why a diesel engine inherently does not want an RPM is because people think it's because of the heavier duty. There's nothing to do with it. The fuel burns slower than gasoline. So the flame expands across the bore slower than gasoline. That's why a diesel, any diesel, not just this one, doesn't have the RPM capability. If you look at tractor pulling, they'll take a diesel, then they'll convert it to alcohol or to something, or to some sort of race gasoline, and the thing will RPM like crazy because the fuel was burning quicker. All right, so what I mean by burning quicker, it's not igniting quicker. Once it is ignited, the flame travels across the bore quicker. All right, so the maximum engine speed on this is 5,100 RPM. And as an engine guy, what that tells me is that this cylinder head is excellent and has a lot of mixture motion, because the more motion that you have, the more turbulence you have in the cylinder bore, is that the quicker you're going to get that burn. So to have the engine be able to run a diesel to run up to over 5,000 RPM is quite an accomplishment. And that's telling me that there's a lot of charge motion, which is excellent for fuel economy, excellent for power, and excellent for emissions. When you have the charge motion, you're going to have lower emissions, specifically particulates, but we won't go there. So, all right, so that's what it says on a blackboard, right? These are the specs on a piece of paper. But the thing is that how does this 3-liter engine, and it's available in a Chevy, it's available in the GMC, and in the Suburban line. So I think it may be available in a Tahoe line. So if you're looking to buy an SUV for the family vehicle, all right, the thing basically is you can also opt for this engine. And depending upon it's not an overly expensive option. I think on the truck I had, the Sierra was a $2,800 option. Right, so don't hold me to that because they're different models, but it's going to be the same engine. Whether if you go look at a new Suburban for your wife, and they're offering this engine, and it's the same engine that I'm discussing here, and the same 10-speed automatic transmission. So the thing basically is, how does it drive? All right, so you know, I was able to spend a week with this truck, and as I said in the beginning of the show, it was a 2020 GMC Denali Crew Cab 4-wheel drive. And the engine, and this is very important to me, and I know it's important to a lot of you listeners, that this is a Flint, Michigan-based engine. This engine was not made overseas. It wasn't made in Mexico. It wasn't made in Europe. All right, it was a Flint, Michigan-based engine. And you know, as an aside to that, the V6 diesel in the Ram is made in Italy, and the V6 diesel in the Ford F-150 is currently made in England. Whether they moved that over to the States, I have no idea. But this American engine, a made in USA, Michigan engine, all right, which was very, very happy about. And it comes with, as an aside before I tell you, it comes with an integral exhaust brake. And that's activated when you have the tow haul mode in the transmission selected. I did not get the opportunity to use the engine brake, so I can't give you any firsthand experience about it. But you know, as an engineer, which I am, with a calibration background, which you've listened, I always repeat that, not for no particular reason. You know, that and whatever, $2 gets you a cup of coffee at the truck stop. So, but with that background, that you know, one word is going to sum up this engine, this 3-liter Duramax inline six, and this made it to this 10-speed transmission. And it's magnificent. Case closed. The engine and drive line on that combination, that 10-speed in this 3-liter Duramax, is magnificent. There's nothing, I don't even think that word is strong enough. It starts as quickly as a gasoline engine, and it's extremely quiet at idle and most driving states, but not all. All right. But I did notice a couple of times a higher degree, only I'm saying only higher because it was so quiet before, of diesel clatter, that the combustion sound from a diesel, right? That's how I got the name of my show, Idle Chatter, or for diesel clatter, during one type of driving scenario. And I tried to identify that and see if I could repeat it. And it was, in my opinion, that it was probably induced by a series of calibration protocols coming together, along with possibly lower than desired cetane fuel. So it was no big deal. I mean, believe me, 99.99% of the people would not even pick that up. So don't think that it's something. But there was one set of scenarios that I could evoke in the driving that I felt that I could hear the combustion noise go up a little bit, ran fine, whatever. So I shouldn't have even said that to you. But interestingly enough, but on during a more aggressive than normal drive away. So what I mean by that is that's a drivability term where you're pulling away, you know, with more throttle opening from a stoplight or a stop sign in town. You could actually hear the intake manifold runner path change. And the reason why they changed the runner path is that if you have the longer runner path, the engine is going to, and it's all under the theory of organ pipe resonance, which is Helmholtz resonance. And I did a show on that a while back on Idle Chatter. But the thing is that, so the longer the runner path, the more torque the engine makes at low speed, the shorter the runner path, the higher RPM capability of the engine, all right? And so thus the higher horsepower, because you need RPM to make horsepower, you need cylinder fill to make torque. So you could actually hear, at one driving scenario, you could actually hear the runner path change and the induction sound change. I actually liked it, all right? It was, and to me, believe it or not, it was like I said, if you have the radio on, you're not paying attention, you're not going to hear it. So please, none of this is I want to tell you everything, and I'm not telling you this as far as a negative by no means is concerned. I'm telling you this because it's, you know, just like you could have a farmer who's an experienced farmer. He's going to go in the field and he's going to look at things on your corn plant that you're not going to see. Not that it's bad, but you're not going to see it. But, you know, I paid particular attention to the things because I want to give you a full review on this engine. And also because I'm anal that way as far as engines are concerned. But I love the sound. It was not offensive, and it actually sounded like an old quadrajet carburetor sucking air. The, you know, when you were a young guy and you had a four-barrel carburetor and you whacked it, right, and you kicked open it. Second, you hear that induction roar. Well, that's kind of what it sounded like. But I said, this thing sounds like an old quadrajet here at one certain point. And to me, sounding like an old quadrajet is something very, very good. GM, when you're listening, leave that induction roar in there at a certain, and what it is, I know what it is. It's a matter of tuning. What I mean by tuning, it's with the manifold starting to resonate with the, and it's a combination of the engine RPM, the piston speed, the manifold starting to resonate or tune, and then the valve events at that particular point, right? The 10-speed automatic transmission, the calibration is perfect. And it's perfectly matched to the torque converter of that engine. The trans is always in the right gear, and everything it accomplished is imperceptible. It's imperceptible. You don't know when it's shifting. You don't know anything. It's not that it's sloppy. It's imperceptible. There's a difference. You know, and that is, once again, the hallmark of calibration excellence. You know, when it comes to this engine, my only concern about this engine package is a perceived lack of being able to get to anything. The engine is quite small. It's only a 3-liter. It's quite small, and it sits very, very low in the frame of the truck. And like all these pickup trucks, like I've always said, the bodies are very high off the frame, gives you no ground clearance, makes the thing look massive. It gives them the ability to run a flat floor and not have to have the drive shaft hump to as much extent. But when you open the hood on this truck with this engine, you're going to see the turbocharger. That's out there, is easily viewed, but not much more. So it also looks like it's encapsulated in something. I mean, if you were to look at it, you say, am I looking at a refrigerator back over here? I don't know what I'm looking at. Other than the turbocharger, it's all encapsulated. You could see nothing. It's very low in the frame with high fenders. You'd actually have to, I mean, so it's you know, unlike a V8, which is a little bit higher or bigger, is that it's really, it's like dropped down into a hole, like in there. So that is a concern of mine, that if you do your own service, that this might be something that you want to check out, to look at more closely before you write a check. But I mean, but that, like I said, I'm just telling you, I was like, whoa, it's way down there deep in that hole. Where is it? I mean, then nothing looks like an engine other than a turbocharger. But, you know, but there are reasons for buying a diesel, all right, in any type of truck. And the reasons are twofold. It's torque and fuel economy. Well, the 3-liter Duramax, inline six-cylinder Duramax, you with the 460 pounds-feet of torque, that box is checked. Okay, baby? There's no excuses there. I mean, yeah, it's not the 900 foot-pounds that an eight-cylinder has, all right, or close to 900 foot-pounds pounds-feet that the V8 has. But at 460 pounds-feet of torque with a 95% flat torque curve, this thing is not embarrassing anybody. This thing is going to work like a banshee on the farm, all right? So pulling a trailer, pulling whatever, this is going to be a workhorse. But you know, the thing is that, all right, you got all this technology, you got a four-valve cylinder, you got this thermal management system. You know, what's the goal of that? Well, the goal, as we said early on, is emissions and fuel economy. And then the reason for buying a diesel is torque and fuel economy, right? Otherwise, other than wanting to be cool and say you have a diesel. Well, sit down. If you're not sitting down when you listen to this, the truck that I had, heavy truck, Denali, four-wheel drive, moonroof, everything in it, right? Had that step in the tailgate and the speakers back there to go tailgating. The truck averaged 30.5 miles per gallon for the entire week that I had it. All right, using it and using it around the farm here, around town, and it returned on the highway at 65 miles per hour. Now, keep in mind, you say, I go 90 miles an hour. Well, the economy is going to go lower, but 65 miles an hour is the legal speed in New Jersey and in eastern Pennsylvania and around here. When you get into western Pennsylvania, it goes up to 70, but it's 65 miles an hour. So that truck returned, all right, and I sit down, 37.8 miles per gallon on the highway at 65 miles an hour. So it was, and I guarantee you, if I took a longer trip with it and had a little bit better driving conditions, I could eke 40, 41 miles per gallon out of it. I actually asked GM if I could keep it another couple of days because I wanted to try to get 41 miles per gallon. I wanted to break 40 with it. I mean, good solid. I wanted to almost be 41, but they had it scheduled for another journalist, so I couldn't get it. But 37.8 miles per gallon, and just driving it normally, air conditioner on. Matter of fact, it was raining out, the headlights were on, the windshield wipers were on, and I was, you know, not, I didn't hit stop and go traffic, but I did hit traffic on the interstate with it. There was an accident, I had to slow down in New Jersey, people crash as soon as it rains, but I got 37.8 miles per gallon. So I guess I have to tell you that we got torque and we got fuel economy. So with the cost premium of, and I believe it's $2,495 over the gasoline 5.3, that this is a stunning, this engine is stunning. The stunning Duramax really should be considered to find a home on your farm and ranch or ranch. And if it's not for your work truck, if you're buying an SUV, whether it's a Tahoe or Suburban or a GMC version of that, really, really, if you do a lot of driving, you tow a camper, you whatever, that this engine needs to be considered. And the thing is that I could, you know, once again, as I started, you know, right, as I started this show, but I started to talk about this show, is that I'm not saying this to just blow smoke over for General Motors. These engineers did a fantastic job on this engine. This 3-liter inline six-cylinder Duramax is going to be a game changer in the light-duty pickup truck and SUV market. And I can strongly recommend it to you. And if it has the durability of the previous, of the V8 Duramaxes, then this thing is going to be a honey. It's fantastic. So listen, if you have any questions about this particular engine, the trucks, or anything else, please feel free to contact me at Hot Rod Farmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. And kudos to you, General Motors. Kudos to you, the engineers, that this you did. Kudos to the guys in Flint, Michigan, who put this bad boy together. This engine is wonderful, and I just tell you that I was proud as a peacock to be able to drive an American-built inline six-cylinder diesel engine, and I am so proud to report to you, my audience, that this GM engine should make you proud and make you happy. If you have any questions, any concerns, please contact me, and you have a blessed, blessed day. Thanks again so much for tuning in.